You're listening to Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
They're still doing some sketchy things. Ooh, Jordan, man. Drives one deep to center field. Trout will watch this one. That's it. It's one. The bushes and straightaway center field. The big man clears the center field wall. Back-to-back jacks. And the Astros lead 3-0.
Oh, just crushing egos out there.
Was that sketchy? Excuse me. Are you home? Hello? Listen, Mr. former Chicago White Sox, whose name is escaping me because he's such a nobody, Ryan Tepera. Was that sketchy to you? Was game four for the White Sox, was that sketchy to you? Because, I mean, this was you after game three. And you have to hold this. You decided to bring up something that, honestly, you weren't a part of. The White Sox hadn't mattered for a couple of years. Am I wrong? Last year they did. They played the Astros in the playoffs. They were going to get their faces stuffed into a locker because, let's be honest, they're not on our level like most teams in baseball. And instead, Ryan Tepera, after one victory, like, oh, well, yeah, we're in Chicago now. You don't get it. It's the South Side. It's dangerous here. He said this about the Astros' perhaps lack of success in this game three where the White Sox, the only game that they won.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it is what it is. They've obviously had a reputation of, you know, doing some sketchy stuff over there. And, you know, it's just we can say that it's a little bit of a difference. You know, I think you saw the swings and misses tonight compared to, you know, the first two games of Minute Maid. But that's not really the story, you know. We come here to play. You know, we're going to compete. We're not going to worry about what they're going to do. All we have to do is execute pitches, and they can't hit them anyways.
He wanted more on at the end, too. Like, maybe the other parts you could perhaps put together a PowerPoint presentation about why the Astros at Minute Maid Park are better than the Astros at, what is it, U.S. Cellular Field. But you're going to say that they can't hit it, period? And then what do they give up, 10 runs the next game? Was it 10-1 game four? And it's funny because you know that the Astros have a list of names. And just like Steve Buscemi's character in Billy Madison, I think that they check it very often. Maybe they cross somebody out if someone calls and says, you know what, yeah, every team in baseball was doing it. But nope. Ryan Tepera, Ryan Tilapia, he didn't do that. And I'm glad that he had to eat it last night. I'm glad that the Astros social media was able to jump on him. I'm glad everybody was able to jump on him. I mean, that was a fun rallying moment. It was late. The game was supposed to start at 8:38, and for some reason it started at 9. I wasn't really 100% sure of why it started so late. I'm like, geez, it's late enough. It's stupid enough that we're stuck in the American League West with all of these liberals, with all of these people, with the games that are starting late. 8:38, that's late enough. A stupid arbitrary time, too. Like, 38, what? And they started it at 9 instead for some reason. I don't know why. So it was nice to have that moment, be like, oh, yeah, remember when that guy was stupid and said the thing? And then he gave up a home run to Alex Bregman, who looked awesome last night. You know, all my concerns about Pena, one thing. I'm really pumped to see Bregman looking the way that he did. And obviously, you want to see him get off to a hot start. Some people have brought up, by the way, with Pena. My concerns with Pena aren't at the plate right now. My concerns with Pena are him in the field. But they bring up some of the other players that took a while to get started. Alex Bregman, I mean, he was off to an awful start when he first joined the show. And Kyle Tucker didn't look the part for a little bit. Now Kyle Tucker, even though he's in the sixth spot in the lineup, which I'm wondering about, that's the only other question I have for Dusty Baker. Like, first off, why Jordan night one and second in left field? Because obviously that play that he missed on, that's something I hope Jordan learns from, but shows that he's clearly a work in progress in left field. The other one was, okay, well, why is Kyle Tucker batting sixth? But, okay, you know, we could see Pena eventually get up to speed. But in that inning, I mean, Tepera gets smacked by Bregman, smacked by Alvarez, the one that you heard, gets clubbed pretty damn far by Kyle Tucker. Yuli Gurriel does the same thing. Yuli Gurriel was smashing the ball last night, too. I mean, that's the longest double I can remember. Right off the center field wall, it looked like it was a 400-foot double. It's ridiculous. He had a double earlier, and he, of course, almost went yard there. And then Jeremy Peña, I mean, for all his struggles at the plate early on against Otani, who's got some filthy stuff, Otani, not on the hill, the other guy, Tapera, comes in there, and, I mean, he was close, Peña, to having a home run down the left field line. It was, I want to say, like 10 feet foul. It was close. It looked like he had it for a second. And I'm sure that would have done wonders for his confidence going forward. He's got to work through all of that. But Tapera, man, what the hell were you doing? What did you think was going to happen when you said those comments? Do you feel like you were never going to play the Astros again? First off. Second off, did you feel like that was going to help you the rest of the series with the White Sox? Something that I have always believed, even though it's probably not true, but having grown up, watched the Patriots, whenever anyone talked trash, I always was like, this game's over. This game is over. If there was trash talk in the week leading up to the game, I was just thinking to myself, there is no way that New England will lose because for whatever reason, whenever this is said, they get locked in and they kill people. And this Astros team is the same way because obviously they've had a target on their back for a while and now they're used to having a target on their back and they have targets on other people. So you better be damn careful when you talk smack about this team. Do you have something to say, Sean? I thought you had a hot take.
No, they're setting up the remote.
Okay.
The killer bee and stuff, and so I had to talk down the line.
Oh, my bad. Okay.
I do realize how I just talked into the microphone and you heard nothing.
I was like, whoa, what was going on there? Well, the killer bees, where are they going to be at today?
I believe Drift.
Oh, Drift. I love Drift. Ever been to Drift? Drift is fantastic.
No, I haven't, actually.
Drift is actually a really nice bar up on 19th on that little stretch. And that's basically that stretch is like my alley. I walk around, stumble.
That's where you prowl?
Yeah, that's where I prowl. It's also where I lose my wallet, but it's mostly where I prowl. Yes, I stumble around I go from bar to bar, you know, gallivanting around, wearing ridiculous Hawaiian shirts like I'm wearing right now. And by the way, I will be wearing this a little bit later at the Bon Temps Roulet, which is going to be down in Hitchcock. So you got to come out. It's going to be fun. I'm going to have a good time tonight. Kick off the birthday weekend. All right, it's Vanessa and Gallant, ESPN 97.5. And 92.5. The Texans extended Brandon Cooks, but they've also been brought officially in to a lawsuit. And it makes me wonder if we're going to see potentially the Texans face any repercussions from the NFL or from just a lawsuit perspective. It is really interesting to see the way that the head coaching hire went and how the Texans seem like they were off scot-free from any potential blowback from the Brian Flores deal. Maybe not so much. It seems like hiring practices across the NFL, there's a lot of questions that you have to ask about them going forward, especially now with this new addendum to the Rooney Rule. So we'll discuss that next. I'm Paul Gallant, 713-780-ESPN. If you got any thoughts on last night's Astros game, 713-780-3776. Vanessa and Gallant, ESPN 97.5, 92.5.
Your home for sports is ESPN 97.5. Vanessa and Gallant continues on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Vanessa Richardson up in Indianapolis with her family after her father passed away. And, you know, we're hoping that they have some good times together. Remembering her dad, George. She obviously had a nice post on social media about that. You can text in 713-780-3776, 713-780-ESPN, a texter. If you don't know something, look it up. There's a slight weather delay. No, I'm not going to look it up. It's Anaheim. There shouldn't be a weather delay. Sorry. But Paul, the weather, El Nino. Nope. Shouldn't happen. It's Anaheim. It's Anaheim in April. Not possible. Was there a wildfire? I don't know. Do I want to look it up? No. I like to be ignorant from time to time. Another text in. This one's pretty funny. And it has to do with me and Jeremy Peña. It's from Aggie Matt. Vanessa and Gallant make a ton of mistakes. Been a month. They got to go. Basically talking about, I think, Jeremy Peña here. Or perhaps they just don't like the show. But in the case if they don't like the show, I would say, like, well, you know, the Aggies make a lot of mistakes. Like, I don't know, going to College Station, period. Or how about, you know, the whole, well, hate to say it, but Yale Leaders, the whole cult deal, paying for a ring that you didn't, you know, win a Super Bowl with, you know, just a couple thoughts. Anyway, throwing shots back, it's fine. It's cool. It's all good-natured trash talk. Astros win 3-1 in their season opener yesterday. That was nice to see. Confusing to see a couple of lawyer things that the Houston Texans are now involved in. And I just say lawyer things because I know that my explanation of this, which is going to try to be trimmed down as much as it possibly can be, is probably going to sound closer to Charlie Day from Always Sunny in Philadelphia trying to explain bird law, or on Arrested Development, every single reference to maritime law, then it actually is going to be me saying things that make any damn sense. But first off, let's talk about the NFL coaching searches that are, I guess, still dealing with the same old they're a sham problem that they have been for a while. There, I think the NFL had good intentions with the Rooney Rule, but there are obvious ways around it. As far as if you want to hire a guy, you might be interviewing somebody who's a minority just for the sake of checking a box. The Texans were going to interview Brian Flores to be their next head coach, formerly of the Miami Dolphins. But now, even with Lovie Smith hired as head coach of the Texans, Flores has added them to his lawsuit against the league and a couple other teams. I believe it's the Dolphins, the Broncos, and the Giants. He alleges the Texans retaliated against him by removing him for consideration for its head coaching vacancy due to his decision to file this action and speak publicly about systemic discrimination in the NFL. Multiple reports indicated the Texans were down to Flores and Josh McCown as candidates at the time the suit was originally filed, and the complaint alleges the Texans were rightfully concerned that hiring McCown would bolster Flores' allegations. There's a case to be made there. I mean, it was, whoa, what? Lovie Smith hired on a Sunday? How the hell did this happen? Because I remember going into the weekend, yeah, we thought it was probably Josh McCown. And maybe that's the problem, too, with the assumption that it was probably Josh McCown. But if you want to hire someone, don't you hire the person that you want? Like, that was my thought process of going into it. Okay, Josh McCown has zero experience. It's probably not going to work out so well. But if they like him, if that's who they want to hire, well, go with the guy that you want to hire. Anyway, instead, they, of course, hired Lovie Smith. And hiring Josh McCown would have not only potentially helped Brian Flores, I think worse, it would have made the Texans look like clowns. And I think that they were more sensitive to that than they were sensitive to something that Brian Flores might be able to get from them in a lawsuit. And the Texans did put out a statement. The search for our head coach was very thorough and inclusive. Due to his previous success as a coach in the NFL, Brian Flores was among the first candidates we held a formal interview with for the position, and he remained a candidate until the very end. We have a lot of respect for Brian, both personally and professionally. He has been a competitive coach in the league for a number of years, blah, 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 his resume, multiple conversations with Brian, where he talked with some people. In the end, we made the decision to hire Lovie Smith, and he's the best fit for our team moving forward. A fluid process, blah, 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 blah. So they put out the statement. They're denying it. I think it's going to be really hard for Brian Flores to prove that the Texans were being, I think, What's the term? They were unreasonable removing him for consideration for head coach because of his lawsuit. I think that's going to be really tough to prove. There's a lot of things that you need to connect, dots that you need to connect that I don't think you can. Other situations, though, I feel like there is perhaps something to work with, because the other part of the lawsuit that we learned yesterday is that Flores filed a claim for retaliation under the Florida Private Whistleblower Statute, arguing he was fired because he refused to lose football games in a violation of the Sports Bribery Act. Look at all these laws and rules and acts. And I guess also, as part of the lawsuit, it was written that Flores wrote down and expressed concern with the idea that he was going to get paid to lose games. And he wrote it in a December 4th, 2019 memo provided to Chris Greer, the GM, CEO Tom Garfinkel, and Senior VP of Football and Business, Brandon Shore, detailing the toxicity that existed within the organization
and explaining the unreasonable position he was being placed in by team ownership and upper management, which is totally fair. I think for him to at least make the argument for. It did seem like the Dolphins were trying to lose. And that Brian Flores, all of a sudden, as the season goes along, he got that team actually working. He's clearly a very good second half of the season coach based off of what we've seen. First half might be, not so much. But this lawsuit is getting really complicated that Brian Flores was a part of, because we saw yesterday that Steve Wilks, the former Cardinals coach, fired after a year, replaced by Cliff Kingsbury, who is not qualified. He has joined into this lawsuit. His first year, I mean, what? He's working with Josh Rosen? That sucks. What are you going to do? Cliff Kingsbury comes in and he gets the number one overall pick and they get to draft Kyler Murray and it's like nothing ever happened. I think Wilkes did get screwed over on that front. And then you have this one. This one seems really damning because you have someone publicly on the record. And guess what organization it happened with? Oh, wow. It's the Tennessee Titans, the scumbag Steelers of the Houston Oilers franchise. What a surprise. The Adams family doing something below the belt, if you will. So Ray Horton was a former Tennessee Titans coaching candidate. I've never heard of him before. Maybe he actually was a legitimate finalist. But I guess because of the guy that they actually hired, the Titans hired Mike Mularkey, by the way, voluntarily, which is funny. Remember Mike Mularkey's exotic smash mouth offense? Yeah, the exotic smash mouth. We're going to run the ball, and we're going to run the ball to Marco Murray time. Let's go. Exotic. Anyway, Mularkey was on a podcast a couple of years ago, and he gave Ray Horton his smoking gun. He said this about his interview for head coach. The ownership there, Amy Adams Strunk and her family, came in and told me I was going to be the head coach in 2016 before they went through the Rooney Rule. And so I sat there, knowing I was the head coach in 16 as they went through this fake hiring process, knowing a lot of the coaches that they were interviewing, knowing how much they prepared to go through those interviews, knowing that everything they could do and they had no chance to go that job. And that's kind of confusing reading that. And actually, the GM, John Robinson, he was in an interview with me. He had no idea why he is interviewing me, that I have a job already. I regret it. Mularkey said that on a podcast. Game blouses for the Titans on this side of the lawsuit. The statement continued from the Titans. Our 2016 head coach search was an open and competitive process during which we conducted in-person interviews with four candidates and followed all NFL rules. The organization was undecided on its next head coach during the process and made its final decision after consideration of all four candidates. Okay, blah, 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 BS, BS, BS. If Mike Mularkey is saying this and feels like it's a sham, I suppose he could be saying it to get attention, but why would you? Like, it's not your cross to bear. You know, you're not a minority head coach. If you actually took issue with it and you say something about it, then maybe you actually said, yeah, this is kind of messed up. I don't know if the Rooney Rule actually does help things out, and I think that this new addendum to it, I don't think that you're actually going to get coaches that are involved in the process, if you will, if they are essentially being paid for by a league pool, with, if you will. Hey, it's an offensive assistant, but isn't an offensive assistant I trust? There's a good old boy system when it comes to coaches that like they only want to work with certain guys. That's why you see the same guys getting jobs over and over again. Like a Brian Schottenheimer, for example, who has like a pretty bad resume considering he's been in the NFL for like 20 years or so. They like working with people that they trust. These offensive assistants are not going to get a fair shot. They're just not. They're not going to be involved. They're not going to be looked at as somebody that actually can provide input that helps out. Whether it's a woman or it's a minority, they're just not going to be helped. And I get what the NFL is trying to do here, but that's not going to make things better. And the Rooney Rule, too, you're still going to get this. And look, here's the flip side of this. You should hire who you want to hire. It's weird that you have to, I think, bring everybody into the mix as far as potential candidates if you're not even going to hire the person. And if you have ever applied for a job, you've no doubt been through a job interview before where you thought that you had a chance, but they probably already made a decision. Is the NFL different? Does the NFL have to be different? I suppose maybe because the sport is predominantly a black sport, that maybe that's something that you say yes to, but does it have to be different than every other interview situation that you have in a workplace? I don't think you can make a strong argument to that as yes. Obviously, we're trying to make things better, but
sometimes in trying to make things better, you actually make things worse. So curious as to how you feel about that, and hopefully I explained the legal side of things as clearly as I possibly could. 713-780-3776, 713-780-ESPN. Oh, Paul, you're talking about law stuff? Boring. Fine. The Astros won yesterday, and I'm going to inject some energy straight into your face. Vanessa and Gallant, ESPN 97.5,
92.5. ESPN 97.5. Please stand by. You're listening to Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
Little chopper, tough play, Bregman tries to bare hand, does so, throws on the money, get it done, AB. Alex Bregman tested for the first time this year, makes the play on Fletch for out number two.
Bregman, who plays third base and not shortstop, looks like he's going to have a Correa-esque war going into the season. Paul, are you talking about advanced statistics? That's a first, I know. But this is baseball, Paul. He's here to talk about all the analytics, all the advanced statistics. Bregman looked awesome in the field. He had the RBI single that broke the nothing-nothing tie. He had the home run before Jordan Alvarez that provided the one-run difference at the time. That actually gave the Astros ultimately the lead that they would never relinquish, because, of course, the Angels did score a run. He looked great last night, and I feel like the MVP campaign, it starts now after a 3-1 victory. And look, it's Friday. It's 11:30. You're almost halfway through the day. Maybe you're getting close to the very end of it. Maybe you're at the office right now, and you're like, oh, my God, I just want to get to, like, 3 o'clock. Get me to 4 o'clock. How many phone calls do I have to pretend I'm doing over the next couple of hours? I'm going to give you the energy to get through the day. 3, 2, 1, Sean Mays, hit it! I don't know.
Why do you think the pitchers throw smoke? Why do you think they go for broke?
Who says it's only a game?
Why do the catchers wear iron masks? Why do they dive for the dive on the grass? Why do they go head first into home?
I don't know.
Why do the losers feel all alone?
They're losers.
Who says it's only a game? When you want it, you give it all you've got.
The war's not over till the final shot. Says it's only a game.
Why do you think they call them spikes?
I don't know.
Why do you think they call them strikes? Why do they give it more than they've got? Why do they always reach for the top? Who says it's only a game?
With me now,
Astros baseball.
Who says it's only a game? Yeah, you wanted that. Why do the losers feel all alone? Yeah, that's you. Ryan Tilapia, is that his name? Tepera? Tilapia. Can I call him Tilapia? Because Tilapia is a very bland fish. I used to be very upset whenever my mom made that for us. And look, I'm glad that my mom cooked for me growing up, but we had a lot of tilapia. There's only so much you could do to make a tilapia taste good. Tilapia, Sean Mapes, behind the glass. Is it not being a responsible journalist calling Ryan Tepera Ryan Tilapia?
I just think... yes, it A, is very irresponsible, and B, I don't think it's that big of a deal, because okay. How much are we really going to talk about Ryan Tepera for the rest of the year? I guess he's going to play the Astros 18 more times.
I don't know. Maybe we should keep that same energy. You know, do we want to make a list of people that, like, whenever we just hear them, let's just like, yeah, let's go on a rant about them. Let's be triggered by small inconsequential.
By middle relievers.
Yes, exactly. A middle reliever who talked trash about the Astros last year. He is one of the last people to talk trash about the Astros, though, and then face the music. I mean, Brian Cashman was never going to step in a batter's box with,
He's going to get fired in whatever, 8 months.
I don't know, Sean. I don't know if he's going to get fired.
Really?
I mean, he did seem maybe a little paranoid for his job, but, like, why?
I thought that's what he was laying the groundwork for with the whole, oh, you know, 27. If you think about it, I really have won a World Series.
yeah, that is pretty
2017.
Funny.
2017.
You know, the Astros really won the World Series against the White Sox back in 2005, if you think about it, you know? Hey. I mean, it really was theirs to win. You know, also, too, you know, all those Mets, you know, doing all that cocaine back in 1986. Like, the Astros also won that World Series,
too. They should have been
too.
In jail because right. of how much drugs they were doing.
And unbelievable. Think about the children. Like, they didn't think about the kids, those Mets teams. Like, Dale Strawberry.
They were committing crimes.
Right. Dale Strawberry was having sex in, like, tunnels. I mean, I guess you can do that at a stadium. But, yes, these guys were committing crimes.
Asterix.
Doc Gooden. His nickname is Doc. I mean, besmirching the good name of doctors? Asterisks. You're right on that Mets title over the 86 Boston Red Sox. The Astros were going to win that series. The Red Sox were cursed then, and that team hated each other, the 86 Boston Red Sox. Like, there was a really good team, but legitimately, the entire clubhouse hated each other. And it's one of the things that it's funny to think about because the Mets were all so close. It's a great 30 for 30, by the way. But again, criminals. The Astros actually have 3 World Series titles. They made it to 2 other ones. I mean, you know what? Now that I think about it, the Astros have won 5 World Series based off of Brian Cashman's logic because they've been to 5. Wait, hang on. No, they've been to 4. They have won all 4 of them. So they've won 4 World Series. It woulda, coulda, shoulda because I got there. And in 86, they would have won. And when they played the Red Sox in what year was that? Was that 2018? I mean,
they're cheating then.
The Red Sox were cheating.
They had asked Cora.
Thank you. 5 World Series for the Houston Astros. What else do we have?
We're going to catch the Yankees at this point.
I mean, shoot. Who's going to stop us? You know, we're going to overtake the Cardinals. We're going to overtake everybody in the next 5 minutes. Oh, yeah, the Astros made it to another ALCS against the Tampa Bay Rays. The Rays are a blight upon baseball for being a bunch of cheapskate pores.
Bubble season, too.
Yeah,
asterisk.
That's true. Asterisk against it. But since the Astros were also in that bubble, I guess we can't claim that, but we can claim, since the Rays are bad for baseball and the New York Mets are criminals, that, yeah, they would have won the ALCS and won the World Series because that's how Brian Cashman thinks. Astros.
No moral victories. No excuses
none,
for the Yankees.
None. Unbelievable. It's really unbelievable that they put that together. If you're Ryan Rocco and you're working for ESPN, and you, well, I guess he does a podcast, a Yankees podcast, well, with CeCe Sabathia,
and
right?
He does Yes because he calls Nets games.
Oh, okay.
So he works for Yes.
Okay, so he's there.
He's an employee of the Yankees.
He's their unpaid intern for the Yankees.
Yes, and Michael Kay was like, I'm not reading this, and then they got Rucco to do it.
They probably didn't want Michael Kay to do it because Michael Kay is kind of like, I don't really like his voice. See ya! Shut up. Like, what a terrible call. At least John Sterling, the Yankees radio guy, is a hilarious character. Oh, the judge is in court. You know, all the terrible cheesy things he has. I appreciate John Sterling. They should have John Sterling do it. Excuses. They're like bruises. I don't know what he would have said on that one, but he would have come up with something creative and corny instead of just unironically hilarious. They posted that without any sense of the fact that Brian Cashman literally was whining about 2017 3 days ago. It was this week, wasn't it? Unless my memory is like all of a sudden evading me.
I want to say it was like Monday.
Monday. That makes more sense. Yeah, I do think Vanessa was here for that. It is Vanessa Engelon, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. So while we're dumping on the Yankees, let's dump on a report that probably was written by some damn carpetbagging Yankee. You know, those Northeasterners, losers. What terrible people. Anyone born in the Northeast? Oh, couldn't be me. Anyway, this report came from, what's it from? Consumer Reports. I'm just going to guess it's a bunch of libs living in the Northeast telling me how to live my life. In the middle of a sweltering summer, you can bet that pretty much everyone has their air conditioners running as cold as possible. However, most of us are probably running our air conditioners at the wrong temperature, which wastes energy and causes our utility bills to soar. Energy Star came out with recommendations for setting your air conditioner so you can save money and use energy efficiently. It is recommended to set your air conditioner at 78 degrees when you're home and awake. What are you talking about? If you leave your home, Energy Star also recommends setting your unit to 85 degrees. What? Do you want your pets to die while you're away? When you're asleep, set it at 82 degrees. Am I going to sleep naked without sheets? Like, what is going on here? It's always funny. This happens once a year where there will be some, like, think piece about, oh, yeah, we shouldn't be using as much air conditioner because some of us are actually cold at the office. It's always from some Northeasterners who have to deal with heat, like, a couple of times a year. You know what's crazy? When I lived in Seattle, guess how many places, as far as homes, had air conditioning in Seattle?
It's super uncommon, right? Because I know because my cousins went on a trip to Seattle and they stayed at a hotel that didn't have AC or stayed at Airbnb or something. And it was like during a heat wave. It was the 1 week they were there.
Dude, 33% of houses up there have air conditioning. It's like the small – and as far as cities go, it's the least air conditioning in the country. I don't know if there's some sort of like regulations that are going on there. But yeah, then we had a couple of days last summer where it was like 110 degrees. And I said to myself, oh God, between this and the occasional days where you can't open your windows because of forest fires, I bought myself one of those home air conditioning units because I was like, I can't deal with this anymore. This is absolutely miserable. And I was setting it for like 69. Nice. These people are telling you to set it to 78 during the day, 82 at night. Big energy. Get out of my wallet. Get out of my life. Must have been written by a Yankee fan. I'm Paul Gallant, Vanessa and Gallant, ESPN 97.5, 92.5. We wrap things up, 713-780-3776, 713-780-ESPN. If you got a hot take, next. Brandon Cook's contract, how do you feel about it? Are you concerned like I am about Jeremy Pena? There has to be some other people that are watching what he was doing in the field and thinking, that's all he's got as far as his cannon? And perhaps the ballsiest volleyball coach of all time. All that and more next.
ESPN 97.5.
We'll be right back after this break.
You're listening to Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
Vanessa and Gallant, ESPN 97.5, 92.5. Vanessa up in Indianapolis with her family. And again, thinking about her dad who passed away, her mom, and her whole family. It's got to be a really difficult time to go through right now. And I really appreciate all the kind words that y'all have sent. Also, I really just love how everyone gets so excited for that Astros song. Someone added a new lyric. Why do I hear that banging sound? They only go deep when that's around. That's the Ryan Tilapia version of this song. And a texter asks this question. I think it's a good one. You know, do you think Tilapia is going to get random injuries and not face the Astros going forward? He might. If you're a man though with any pride, you got to go up against him and you got to beat him. That's it. That's all you can do. If you don't do it, I mean, you're going to consistently get bodied online, and you're not going to back down from something like this, are you? No, you can't. You're going to look like an idiot if you do. So you have to beat him. But can you? I don't know, because they are clearly very motivated and are looking to embarrass him, looking to go yard on him whenever he is up. Boy, they crushed him last night. That was fantastic. And the 3-1 victory. I am a little concerned about Jeremy Pena. I realize it's early, and it's mostly about his defense. The stuff at the plate, I know he's not going to be the next Carlos Correa. I've accepted that. But he needs to be a great defender. And I don't think he was great. I think he was someone that leaves a lot to be desired. You should be a good fielder. Like, I don't think that's something that you get better at as you're in the majors. Maybe you do if you're Jordan Alvarez. And as a caller earlier, I think it was Brad, brought up, if I'm going to criticize Jeremy Pena for the error that he had and for a throw that Yuli had to scoop, well, I should criticize Jordan. And that's fair. But I think Jordan, who hasn't played a lot of outfield recently, he does need that seasoning. I think with Pena, like, Pena's been playing shortstop for a while. He's been the Astros' top prospect. And I don't think that your arm just gets better over time throwing it from shortstop. And Correa had a hose. So I'm a little concerned. But you guys seem to be patient. I'll try to be patient my best. A texter says, we never faced Mike Fiers again. So that is a fair point when it comes to talking about Ryan Tilapia of the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. It would be nice if the Astros played an exhibition game against that random team in Mexico, right? Like, they all go in disguises. Everyone puts on a fake mustache. They could wear the, and you hear them every single night, right? Here on ESPN 92.5. How about they disguise as the Sugar Land Space Cowboys on an exhibition to Mexico, a diplomatic exhibition. But it's really, like, essentially an assassination of Mike Fire's attempt. I think we'd all approve that. I'd approve that crossing of the border. What else we got on the text line? 713-780-3776. It's so early to grade Pena. I get it. The arm, though. I don't think that's something that you're grading. You either have it or you don't, you know? So I think we're going to see a lot of bounce throws to first base. Good thing Yuli Gurriel is a gold glove first baseman on that front. So I'll try not to be panicky, but look, I'm a very overreactive person. I'm a very emotional person. Speaking of emotions, I'm glad that the Texans gave the deal that they gave to Brandon Cooks. 2 years, $39 million. 36 of it is guaranteed. They need good players. Do not try to argue against me on this. I will continue to fight you. You can't have a roster completely bereft of talent with the idea that you're just going to nail all these draft picks. We haven't seen Nick Caseria with a first-round pick yet, so we don't know what's going to happen with these next six first-round picks, but you do have a lot. The next 3 years, you have 15 picks in the first three rounds. It's time to keep some of the players that you do have that you know are good. Cooks is one of them. Laremy Tunsil is one of them. And it seems like, from a I-like-it-here perspective, that they are buying in. That's good. And I think it's one of the reasons that maybe they did keep Lovie Smith around, not just because it would have been bad with Josh McCown. Lovie Smith's done it before. Pep Hamilton showed some progress working with Davis Mills last year. If you want to see what happens with Davis Mills this coming season, see if he can continue to take a step forward. You need some continuity, but you also need some guys around him. Tunsil gives you that. And on top of that, you also have Cooks giving you that. All right, what else do we have before we hit the road? This is a badass move, but it's also messed up. Imagine you're taking over a new coaching gig in college, and you just cut everyone. People who have scholarships, who thought that their ride was provided. Well, that's what Grambling State University's new head volley coach did. Chelsea Lucas. She was hired in February, and she released 19 players from the team earlier this week. So now there's open tryouts going forward. The Grambling State University Athletics Communication Director, Brian Howard, says athletic program leaders knew Coach Lucas will be making some changes to the roster. He did not know to what extent. He says the move was not previously discussed. I think you should have to previously discuss cutting the entire team. Because this is the kind of thing that you do in like a sports movie. And it works in the sports movie, right? This could have happened in Miracle. I'm cutting you until you earn your stars and stripes. You're not here. Or what? Was it Glengarry, Glenn Ross? Everyone is fired. Coffee is for closers, but you can get your job back now. Okay, that's the world of sales. A little different. You're just going to cut your entire volleyball roster and ask for walk-ons? Because there's flyers being handed out right now. This sounds like a sports movie.
This is basically like Mighty Ducks for Grambling State.
Yeah.
Volleyball. But yeah, you would think it would come up in the interview, right?
Right.
Like, so what are your plans for this roster? Or something, you know?
Yes.
I plan on cutting everyone.
They're cutting the entire team. Okay. All the power of the world literally to you.
Yeah, you got a really unique vision, and that's what we're looking forward to here at Grambling State Volleyball.
Oh, yeah. Listen, we do things differently. Me, Chelsea Hunter, I just see it in a way you don't. It's about the joy of the game. You know, you play for a scholarship. No, you play for the love of the game. You either love this or you're out. Okay. I mean, goodness gracious. We've all had to do jury duty at some point. And you would think that being involved in a case like the Parkland shooting, that you would feel a civic duty to want to be a part of it. It's why it's hard to look at this story and to try to talk about it seriously, because some people obviously don't ever want to be on a jury. And this person, I mean, I'm just blown away by how transparent and honest she is in her attempts to get off the jury for the Parkland shooting. Here she is, trying to explain.
The dates in July that you're not available. What are those dates?
July 7th, July
4th, which is closed, and July 18th. But then again, I need to figure out something. I have my sugar daddy that I see every day.
I'm sorry?
My sugar daddy.
Okay, I'm not exactly sure what you're talking about.
But well, I'm married and I have my sugar daddy. Okay. And I see him every day.
All right, ma'am, we'll come back.
I'm married and I have my sugar daddy. Ma'am, we'll come back to you. That's a lot to process for the judge. He's like, what? And it's funny, too. She brings up a couple of arbitrary dates. Well, it's my son's birthday. And then also there's the 4th of July. You're not going to get called into court on the 4th of July. Like, first off, like, calm down. And second off, them's the rules. That's why they pay you if you end up on one of these juries. I've actually wanted to be on it once for the experience. My big problem is I don't think I'd be able to shut up. I feel like I would, like, reveal everybody on the show. I'd be like, hey, it's just between me and you. This guy's totally innocent, but no one else in the jury thinks so. Like, I would share all the details. I wouldn't be able to stop myself, and then I'd end up in jail myself.
Also, I feel like the length of the trial would really, really harsh your vibe a lot of just having to sit there and listen for 4 or 5 hours at a time. Like, lunch, you get a sandwich or something, and then you just got to sit there for the rest of the day.
Yeah.
Can't imagine Pauly G does well in that.
No. Especially if I got a sugar mama to see later that night.
Yeah, and you do. So this is actually allegedly good news for you that you can.
I don't know. See, here's what I wonder.
Precedent.
Do you think, Sean, that she's going to get off of jury duty? I don't think she is. I mean, I don't think this is honestly an effective excuse. It would have been more effective to say, like, yeah, I believe in murdering children.
Well, now it's like,
you know,
a
like
whole...
that's the only way you would get off. And even then, I don't think anyone would actually believe you.
Well, now it's like a whole fiasco, though. So it's like a media whatever. Like, you, I think they just try to get as anonymous as people as possible that are willing to do it. And this lady is already not anonymous because there's a viral video of her.
Yeah. No, but you didn't see her face. You just heard her. You heard her talk. I got to say, though, it's just brazen. And respect, I guess.
That would be the hardest part for me to, like, lie to get out of jury duty is just being able to, like, just with a straight face, like, just be like, I can't do this for this stupid reason.
I'm a bad liar. I wouldn't be able to either. I think ultimately give a tell if on the few times that I've tried to lie, I'm just not good at it. I'm not, because I'm like, oh, what do I say next? How do I sound like I'm not sweating? How do I sound like my eyes not flickering? Which was what my mom always told me when she thought I was lying. Your eyes flickering. And then I'd be like, damn it. Here's what I did. Yeah, I punched my sister in the face. Yeah, I pushed Sarah off the cozy coop and knocked her front teeth out because she was trying to drive my ride. It happens. Big thanks to everybody who tuned into today's edition of the Vanessa and Gallant radio program. We miss Vanessa. We hope that she's back next week. We'll keep you posted on everything for her. But if you haven't already, please send her some love at Sports Vanessa on her Twitter, on Instagram, as she's up in Indianapolis with her family after her father passed away. Coming up next, it's the Killer Bees live from Drift up in the Heights. Fantastic place to kick off your weekend. So you want to go join the guys up there. I am merely Paul Gallant. That's Sean Mapes behind the glass. So long, farewell. Have a wonderful weekend.
Stay up to date with the latest innovations hitting the city of Houston by visiting innovationmap.com or follow them on any of your social media platforms. Just search Innovation Map.